Hello and welcome to Lauren's Space Pod 2012 on the Space, a new way to enjoy the arts free and online this summer. I'm Lauren Laverne. Come aboard with me as I hover above the landscape of the UK-wide 2012 Festival and the Cultural Olympiad. Pod, tilt audio receivers to Bristol, please. I believe we have Shane Morgan ready to report.
I'm in Bristol for See No Evil, which is part of London 2012's festival programme, which sees over one spectacular weekend, Europe's largest street art project that involves over 30 of the world's leading graffiti artists. But it's not just about street art. There are also sound stages, video projections, live art, big one-off musical events that involve a whole host of world-renowned people, including Adrian Utley from Portishead. So, Lauren, if you swing by a little later on and beam me aboard, I will tell you a lot more about why Bristol is suddenly on the map as being a cultural hub, thanks to, in large part, this international festival.
Oh, definitely do that, then. To Edinburgh next, though, and Pod, the international festival. Please set my audio stream for my space monkey, John Holmes. He's there. You're right, John.
Well, Lauren, thank you for asking. This week, my mission, should I choose to accept it, which obviously I have, is to climb an extinct volcano in both the dark and some substandard walking boots. I'm in Edinburgh, where for the festival, the iconic bit of rock known as Arthur's Seat is the backdrop for something called Speed of Light, where, in the middle of the night, a hill-walking audience, me included, climb precariously to the summit to watch hundreds of runners in remote-controlled light suits make shapes on the dark slopes far below. It's a piece of environmental art with the emphasis on mental.
All systems glow then, John. Pod, I detect a visitor. Open airlock doors. Welcome, Fissin Gunner from theartsdesk.com. Hello, you. What you got with you there?
Hello. I've got something called Little Sun, which I was given.
It's not a small child, you should probably tell people.
It's Sun, S-U-N. It's a solar lamp by an artist called Alifu Eliasson.
OK.
I visited Tate Modern on Saturday night where they had a blackout and we went to the Surrealist galleries in the dark.
Well, I was there too. I'm going to be talking to you about that later, Fiss. And for now, thank you very much. Pod, reconfigure my monitor screens and set coordinates for Bristol, if you would. Oh, yes. I can see quite a lot of stuff going on down there. Trace elements of human activity involving Charles Hazelwood, Can Too and Jeremy Deller. There's also an art project in Nelson Street led by local graffiti legend Inky and an audiovisual spectacular in the passenger shed, now a car park, with musicians Adrian Utley of Portishead, Goldfrapp's Will Gregory and PJ Harvey collaborator John Parrish, all set off with multi-screen projections by an international team of designers and animators. And Pod, you're showing me that that was the See No Evil Festival, and earlier you detected an incoming signal from one of its prime architects, Adrian Utley. What did he want the audience to experience?
Something that's been in my head musically, and something that we've made together, an experience that you probably would be hard to see outside of this situation, really, because it's so grand and so big and so expensive to do, that it's not often you can have this great opportunity to do these things, you know. Bristol's a great city. It's got an enormous amount of creativity from all areas of work, from all areas of work, and oft not seen, really, you know. It's often not in Bristol, you know. I mean, Portishead, that I'm involved in, we hardly ever play in Bristol, you know. The venues are not here and stuff, so it'd be nice to turn the city into something that to realise the potential of what is here, you know.
Stay with Bristol, please, Pod, and re-establish my audio connection with Shane Morgan from the city's Rough House Theatre. Shane, you were one of the thousands of participants at the festival over the weekend. How did it go?
Do you know what? This was an absolutely amazing experience, because being one person reading about this, you think, OK, it's going to be incredible. But actually, when you're one person surrounded by thousands of people, it is a truly remarkable experience, because not only are you looking at live street art being created in front of you, you've got sound stages all around you, so the city is absolutely pumping full of music. But then you actually get led to this incredible installation that is part of the city's historic landscape. Anyway, you're in Brunel's old shed, which, you know, is in itself a historic event. Now it's a car park, of course, as you quite rightly say. But actually, you're surrounded by absolute legends of the music world. You've got someone, you know, you've got Adrian from Portishead, you've got Goldfrapp, you've got PJ Harvey. Surrounding you, creating music in front of you. This was a truly remarkable and one-off experience. I have to say that it being one-off, all the work that has gone into it has left, you know, a lot of people very, very happy in Bristol.
It sounds pretty spectacular. So tell me a little bit about that music finale then. 15 guitars, 8 projectors. It sounds enormous.
Well, the whole shebang was about 2 hours long because we got led into Brunel's old passenger shed and we're surrounded on 4 sides by screens. And to begin with, you're actually having old GPO propaganda films projected on all 4 sides that's been curated by Mark Cosgrove, who's the head of programming at the Watershed. So you're surrounded by this this landscape that is historic anyway. You've got the projected images of the railway, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes this remarkable music. Now, of course, Portishead itself is known as being a leading band in its art, and then when you've got all these other collaborators filling this space and also 2,500 people surrounding you, there's nothing like it. It was a heartbeat that was going on in the centre of Bristol.
Now, Shane, you've got a theatre and performance background. Do you think Bristol has an iconoclastic reputation when it comes to arts? Do you think that you have to be quite broad-minded to have taken part in and enjoyed something like this?
I think you've got to be broad-minded. You've got to accept the premise, first of all. You're not in a conventional theatrical environment. But also, too, Bristol itself is actually a springboard because, as Adrian said, a lot of people who have started off life in Bristol rarely actually go back to Bristol because they've created and they've started their career there and then they've gone on to bigger and better things, but they keep going back. There is something quite culturally remarkable about Bristol, and I think that open-mindedness and that acceptance is something that Bristolians or people in the southwest have always had.
Okay, and street art obviously is just incredibly important down there. Apart from the actual gig itself, how did it work in a wider context this weekend?
Well, I think the great thing about the location that they've chosen, it's Nelson Street, which in itself, before the festival, and this is only the second year the festival has been running, before the festival started, it was quite a dark, dismal, pretty scary street, actually, because it was a place that you would choose not to walk down after dark. But now they've actually centred upon this street. They've absolutely brought it to life. There are restaurants down there that they've said business has never been better. It's bold. It's colourful. There is a sense of it being vibrant. And the idea that they've actually chosen, they've shut down and chosen a street in Bristol that ordinarily would be avoided is a remarkable event. And everyone that was involved in the event itself said how remarkable it was that actually one, from an administration point of view, you can actually shut down the street, but also, too, the number of people that actually centre on that street just to take in this street art.
Cool. Oh, well, that sounds pretty good. It would be churlish to say. I sometimes worry about Bristolians who just want a nice exhibition of watercolours or landscapes at this moment. It sounds like a great success. Glad you enjoyed it. Thank you very much, Shane.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Shane Morgan. And See No Evil is on view at Nelson Street, Bristol, as a multi-storey permanent outdoor gallery. Edinburgh Next Please Pod and Arthur's Seat, which looms high above the city, transformed now into a human artwork of walking and endurance running as part of the 2012 festival. Set Data Stream, Bring Me Speed of Light and Space Monkey John Holmes.
Not all of Edinburgh's myriad of festival venues are in theatres, backrooms of pubs or hastily erected performance tents. One of this year's venues is in the centre of the city all year round, ordinarily home to dog walkers and stoned teenagers watching the sunrise. The ancient rock of Arthur's Seat is, for this year's festival, transformed into a stage, quite literally the size of a mountain. This is the backdrop for NVA's Speed of Light, a piece of environmental art which involves hundreds of runners, walkers, darkness and, most importantly, remote-controlled light suits. In charge of them is the project's creative director, Angus Farquhar, and I asked him to, well, enlighten me.
This is Arthur's Seat, which is one of Scotland's most famous mountains. And over the next 4 weeks, we're taking 4,000 hill runners, and each runner is in a light suit, which can be visible from 2 miles away. Each one is individually remotely controlled, so as they run in patterns of choreography across the mountain at night, you see these patterns of light beginning to emerge.
Did you watch Tron as a child?
I didn't watch Tron, funnily enough, but the Tron image did begin to come in, and there is a definite feeling that the light suits are set somewhere slightly in the future. I think there's a hint of science fiction there. An audience of 800 are walking with specially designed light sticks, which also harvest energy, so just the act of movement creates a flickering light on the top of their light stick. And we've found from audience reaction that people see different things in the patterns. And we leave that very open. There's no right way of seeing it. It depends what you bring as an audience member to the work.
What I, as an audience member, brought to the work was the persona of a slightly unfit man struggling to the top of Arthur's seat in the dark. So I'm now climbing Arthur's seat in the pitch dark, I guess overlooking the estuary, and indeed most of the city of Edinburgh. We've got light sticks, and below us now there are, I guess, about 100 people, runners, in these light suits that have taken up occupancy on the other side of the mountain that's opposite us. And I'd say they've sort of kind of arranged themselves all over it in the dark, and it does, I have to say, look fairly impressive. But I'm actually finding it quite hard to concentrate on them, lest I trip over on these rocks and fall off the mountain, thus giving a whole new legacy to the evening. On top of Arthur's Seat, it's windy and cold, but the views are spectacular. It's a place people come to enjoy the silence, something that soon became apparent we couldn't do because it was at this point that our light sticks started to emit a strange humming noise that sounded like a wasp trapped in some bagpipes. It was all part of the show, as Edinburgh Festival director Jonathan Mills explains.
At a certain elevation, when you start to walk with your light rod, a sound will start to be emitted. So it will be a halo of light and sound. It'll be quite, I think, an extraordinary experience.
Bagpipe wasps. Next, I asked Jonathan why he chose to programme Speed of Light for his festival.
What city in the world of the sophistication of Edinburgh has a site like this?
Johannesburg. They've got Table Mountain.
Only Edinburgh.
Right. Quite high up now, looking out over the city and over the whole of Arthur's Seat on the other side, and right on the top, spreading all the way down the mountain in lines, are these people in these light suits, which are sort of glowing blues and reds and purples and changing colour as they walk. And it's just got dark enough now that you can't see that they're actually people shaped anymore. They just look like dots of light. Now the lights are blinking on and off on the suits in choreographed patterns. It's like a supermarket own brand version of Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I think the other thing about this project, in addition to the participation, in the addition to the obvious resonances with mountains rising to a peak, all of the cliches you can imagine, is this idea of the simple act of you and your person sensing the place.
I had sensed the place. It was dark, freezing, and a health and safety officer's nightmare, but in a good way. I asked some of my fellow walkers what they made of it all.
Yeah, I've never done anything like it, ever. It makes me feel almost like laughing now we're back, because I just think it's so daring that we even ever ventured up there at all with our, you know, with these kids and our staffs, and everyone's up there in this kind of wilderness with these lights. I've never done anything like it. And I think only now I'm down and I'm back, I think how slightly mad it was, really.
She was right, too. It is mad. But frankly, that's what festival events should be about. Chucking the rulebook off a cliff and using the city they're in as a canvas on which to create art. And out here on Edinburgh's iconic hill, that's exactly what they're doing. Even if that humming sound is a bit annoying. This is John Holmes for Lauren's Space Pod at the Edinburgh Festival.
Isn't he lovely? Speed of Light runs nightly to the 1st of September. See eif.co.uk/speedoflight for more details. In the next edition of Lauren's Space Pod 2012, John Holmes' Space Monkey, your mission will involve a string quartet and four helicopters. Confused? You may remain confused once you take a look at Karlheinz Stockhausen's Helicopter String Quartet, which is being streamed live here on The Space from the 22nd of August. Now, Pod, reconfigure data streams for London's Bankside, where the surrealist galleries inside Tate Modern are being plunged into darkness on on Saturday nights throughout the summer. Art lovers have been congregating in the Turbine Hall after dark to experience a series of blackout nights. I was there on Saturday, as was Fiss and Gunnar. You were too, weren't you?
Yes, I was. And I was slightly surprised because it was very busy. It was a very packed event, very popular. It wasn't quite as dark as I was expecting, unfortunately.
Oh, really? You wanted total inky.
Everyone was with their lamps. Everyone was wearing these lovely lamps that were that was designed by Eliasson. They're quite powerful. They're quite powerful lamps. If you have dozens, I don't know how many people were there, but if you have dozens of them, it was a very well illuminated event.
Okay, so Tate blackouts, not quite as blacked out
not as dark,
as,
not as,
you would have
intimate
liked.
And not as hushed as I was expecting.
Okay, Fiss, give me a bit of background on this then. Where does the idea come from?
If anybody remembers the very popular event, the commission, the Turbine Hall commission that Eliasson did, a Danish artist called Allafur Eliasson, he did a Turbine Hall commission way back in 2003, which was extremely popular. It was the Weather Project. And this is an artist who's really interested in working with light. And he's gotten together with Tate Modern to produce a series of lamps, which are on sale. And you have to purchase these lamps. And they're called the Little Sun. And they're basically handheld items. You actually wear them on your neck. You purchase these lamps, then you can go round the Surrealist galleries.
And, which are blacked out.
Which are blacked out.
She's disapproving then.
Which are blacked out.
To an extent, Lauren. I mean, dim, you know.
But it's a very well illuminated space when you've got that many people
okay.
going through the galleries.
Okay. Part of the point of this, I feel, is to see the work in a new way, which I think worked. I think you do. You know, as you say, you've got your little son round your neck. You can hold it in your hand. And it makes you kind of take a more active role in going round a gallery than you otherwise would. You know, normally you walk into an art gallery and they've spent ages deciding how to hang everything and then everything's lit and it's kind of you're being directed. Do you think that there's a sense in which, you know, it forces you to make your own choices?
Where I thought it really worked well was the sculpture galleries because, I mean, there was a one room which worked incredibly well, which is the Joseph Beuys room. Joseph Beuys wasn't a surrealist, he was a conceptualist. So you get to explore not just the surrealist works, but later artists as well. That room worked particularly well, and the sculpture rooms work particularly well because these pieces cast, you know, great massive shadows against the wall. It was very atmospheric, very evocative. So I thought it worked particularly well in the sculpture galleries, and also the sculpture galleries were less populated. So you got that kind of sense of, you know, this was a really hushed, intimate space where you could explore these works with your little lamp. Mm. Where I felt worked less well were the painting rooms. But, you know, it was an interesting experience. There is something about seeing the work afresh when you're forced to look very closely.
I was thinking that about the because you have this little beam, so you're kind of directing
yes.
it one
yes,
tiny
yes.
detail at a time. And I was looking at Dali's Metamorphosis of Narcissus, the hand with the egg.
Yes.
And, you know, you kind of suddenly find yourself concentrating on a tiny little ant running up the thumb or whatever that you'd actually never noticed before. And that must have been how they were created, you know, one little detail at a time.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to be completely down on it because it was an interesting experience and I would recommend it. There was a work by Picasso. It's a very late Picasso and it's a very violently painted Picasso. He painted it when he was about 86 and it's a nude of his wife, his last wife, Jacqueline Roque. That, I've never seen it, obviously. I've never seen it in the dark. I've never seen it with a lamp. And it really forces you to look at
the many orifices.
It's a wonderful painting. it's a quite an aggressive painting of
the
nude.
Yes.
But I just thought, yes, some of the works are like the Picasso, which were quite expressionistic. You could look at the paintwork in detail. And that was quite interesting.
Well, thank you very much, Fiss and Gunnar from theartsdesk.com. I must say I had a smashing time. Tate blackouts continue to the 8th of September. Tickets are free, but booking is required. Go to tate.org.uk/modern for more. And for the accompanying exhibition, Olafur Eliasson, Little Sun, that runs to the 23rd of September as well. Another visitor now to my space pod. Welcome, Andrew Dixon from The Guardian's culture section. You're here with a festival roundup for us. So fill us in, Andrew. What what shouldn't we have missed in the week gone by?
Well, I think I've just come back from Edinburgh. I spent a couple of weeks there, so if I'm going to choose two Edinburgh ones, actually Speed of Light, which you just heard about, which is on until the 1st of September, which is a kind of an amazing experience, if only for being up in Arthur's Seat in the dark, which feels incredibly dangerous. That's kind of amazing. Also, another Edinburgh show, 2008 Macbeth, which is now finished, but you can watch it for free on the Guardian website, which I think is a plug, technically.
Sneaky. All right, looking ahead this week, priority booking. Where do we start?
Well, priority booking. I think, again, another Edinburgh show, the arrival in Britain of the Théâtre du Soleil, directed by Ariane Mnouchkine, amazing French director, thought by some people to be the world's best theatre director. It's the first time they've been in the UK for 20 years. They're doing this spectacular four-hour show based on Jules Verne. I'm going to have to try and pronounce it with my GCSE French. It's
good
called...
Luck.
Okay, I'm going to go for it. Les Naufragés du Fol Espoir.
Sounded very good to me.
Thanks very much. Yeah. Which apparently translates as survivors of the ship called the Mad Hope. But they do these spectacular immersive shows. There's nothing like them. And it is literally probably almost the only chance you're going to get to see them in the UK. So I would definitely book for that. That's on the 23rd of August. Another show or experience, maybe Robert Wilson's Walking Project in Norfolk, which is happening on Holcombe Beach, one of the most beautiful beaches in the UK.
Sounds relaxing.
Well, I don't know. It involves a three-mile walk, so it depends how you feel about that, I suppose. But it's you walk along the coast and it's described as a landscape installation. So there are going to be sculptures there. I think there are going to be performance elements. The photographs look amazing. That's from the 20th of August and is running until early September. And then I think another thing, hopping to the other side of the UK, to Northern Ireland, German artist Hans-Peter Kuhn is doing an installation called Flags on the Giant's Causeway, which again looks kind of sensational. They're going to be 140 red and yellow hardball flags placed all over the basalt there. German artist who specialises in light and sound installations, working in unusual places. So, I mean, as long as it doesn't rain too much, it will probably look totally sensational.
It's always going to look sensational. It's a bit like Arthur's Seat, a bit like the Norfolk Coast. I think to an extent, yeah, if an artist is using that, cheating.
Well, it's true. It's true.
Looks great.
But no, I think that should be really good. And also, that's free as well, which is great.
No, I'm kidding. Lots to look forward to. Sounds great. Thank you very much, Andrew Dixon. Right now, Pod, what's this? An antennae alert?
And the oak and the ash and the bonny ivy tree. We covered them in tarmac, sold the land to NC.
Ah, yes, folk musician and Mercury Prize nominee Eliza Carthy, whose Welcome Songs project for the 2012 festival comes to Aylesbury on the 28th of August. The performance is going to celebrate the arrival of the Paralympic torch from Stoke Mandeville Stadium nearby and the official opening ceremony of the Games the following day.
There's a car park on cold to the rolling hills, or fold to the granite mills, or sold to granite mills. Took them to museums, paid a euro and a bit to see them. We took them to Bilbao, new Leeds as it is now. Oh, 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 oh.
Zesty. Well, time to end transmission. Pod, clear all incoming streams and prepare my SpacePod 2012 for immediate shutdown. Remember, all of the space is available online now at our website, thespace.org. And for more on the festival, go to london2012.com/festival. Till our next journey, where my guest will be actor Simon Russell Beale. This is Lauren Laverne saying goodbye. Transmission over and out.